by Briggs Auto Lane and BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Here we go!
Hello, welcome to the game. I'm John Kurtz, joined by Tyler Dreiling and Mitch Fortner. Coming up today, we'll talk with our man Cole Manbeck at 4:30. Do that in hour one of the show this time because 5:10 is reserved for Minnesota Vikings linebacker Elijah Lee. Had a chance to talk with him earlier today, and it was awesome. By far the best interview I've ever done with him. You will be very interested to hear his answer to the coolest thing about playing in the NFL. A question I almost felt silly asking. Got the best response out of him. Jabroni of the Week at 5:50 as well. That's what's coming up on the show today. As always, you can communicate with us on Twitter at TheGameKMAN or JL Kurtz at Tyler Dreiling at Mitch the Fort. Mitch is going to be busy working on Jabroni of the Week throughout the show today, so don't expect an immediate response. You can call the show 537-1350, 866-776-1350. I kid and say that half jokingly because we always make fun of you retweeting things during the show, and you told us today no time for that because you have to worry about Jabroni of the Week.
Well, I'm going to worry about Jabroni of the Week first, and then I'll get your retweet, John.
You're promising both?
Oh, you're going to get both.
Okay. All right. We are going to get Mitch's WTF fact. Apparently, hour two. Should we expect hour two?
That's fine.
Can we tease it at all? Just somewhere an hour two?
Somewhere an hour two.
Okay. Somewhere an hour two. Be following Mitch the Fort for that. Couple things here in the open. I thought today we would be pretty much done talking about the Corey Sutton saga, and I don't mean to bring it back up just to beat it into the ground, but I happen to be reading Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star's weekly question and answer that he does on Twitter, basically, the Mellinger Minutes, because typically he'll go more in-depth with a wide variety of topics there, and I really respect his opinion, and I thought he brought up a great solution to the problem that K-State just went through with Corey Sutton and somebody wanting to transfer. This really makes a lot of sense, and it would save K-State and Bill Snyder the bad publicity that just happened in this latest scenario. It all goes back to my initial thoughts on this, which is the problem is the way this is structured. And if we're going to make something good come out of this, why not institute a rule like this? This was Sam Mellinger's solution. I'll read directly from the column here. Make the transferee formally apply for a transfer, then wait 30 days and see if that's still the desired outcome. If the athlete's mind changes, great, move on. But if not, let him or her decide where to go and move on then too. So the schools cannot block a release anywhere, not even the conditional, hey, you can go to these five schools, whatever. Just take that out of the school's hands. If they still want to go at the end of the waiting period, you go ahead and let them take off and go. Then you're taking the bad publicity and any of that stuff out of the coach's hands. You're giving the athlete more of a fair shot. I think there is an aspect of win-win here. Coaches will lose some control, but for the most part, I think this would be a win-win all the way around. I mean, this just makes so much sense. It's like I read it, and it just makes too much sense not to work or try and implement.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so, but, you know, the NCAA has a really hard time embracing common sense sometimes, and I even say that as someone who is on their side more often than you are, but I do agree with Sam here. I think that makes a lot of sense, and you know, the big thing about it is making sure that the athlete knows exactly what they want to do, because maybe it's not as common in a 20-year-old as it is in a 13- or 14-year-old, but minds change a lot, and they change pretty quick. And you have seen, I think, some cases, some publicized, some not, where there is some remorse or some second-guessing of decisions when players or recruits switch their commitments or transfer without really giving it much of a thought. Then all of a sudden they realize, oh, man, what did I just do? But having 30 days to talk about it, or as I assume you're going to bring up, maybe shortening that a little bit, would definitely help to eliminate that.
Yeah, it takes away one of the two major complaints that it seemed like Bill Snyder had about this and that, in general, the coaches are going to have about this. One is what Bill Snyder said, and this won't necessarily address that. Hey, we don't want any backup that's concerned about playing time to just transfer because it's too easy. But I do think this blunts that somewhat because it's not as easy when you have to wait 30 days, whatever it's going to be, through the waiting period. But the other part about that is just the mere fact that they, you know, they're 18, 19-year-old kids, their minds can change very quickly, they can make snap decisions on the fly. Well, having to wait, think it out, go talk to whoever it is they need to talk to in their lives to make sure everything is on the up and up there for them to go ahead and transfer, I think that is perfect. And I wouldn't even make it a 30-day waiting period. Ideally for me, I would make it more along the lines of 15 days. And the reason I came up with that is because I believe that was how long the appeals process had to go through here for Corey Sutton. I thought 30 days seems a touch long if you're really trying to get things moving. You don't want to hold them in limbo too long. 15 days seems like it would be enough. You know, a lot of times big decisions, they say just go sleep on it. Well, sleep on it 15 times. You know, I mean, I think that would be plenty of time for everybody to go ahead and make up their minds. And the one thing I will say in favor of the schools, too, is that one of the major concerns can be tampering. If they're concerned about somebody tampering with a kid, and I would think this would come up more often if it's like a grad transfer, somebody that is going to graduate, schools know that they could be on the market. If you're concerned about tampering, spend those 15 days addressing those concerns with the NCAA, make a case there, and you'll have some time to go do some due diligence on your end as well. I like it from that standpoint.
It also gives the coaches an opportunity, not that they didn't have this already, but it gives the coaches that period of time an opportunity to almost re-enter a recruiting state of mind and try to shore up whatever issues there actually are. Now, some of them are going to be impossible to do because in a lot of cases, transfers are transferring because they want to get closer to home. They're homesick, maybe health issues with their family, things that are not going to be able to be reversed. But when it comes to a recruit thing, or not a recruit, a player being upset with, say, the playing time or how much they played in the spring game, or if they played with the number twos in the spring game and they wanted to be with the number ones, that's something that a coach would be able to have that period of time, 15 or 30 days, to actually sit down with them and say, okay, we know you're upset, let's work this out. And maybe we would have fewer transfers as a result if there was that period of time where there could be a resolution.
Yeah, which is going to be more work for the coaches because they do have to go into recruiting mode again. So I'm sure from that standpoint, they wouldn't be crazy about it. But I do think that helps lead to a better ultimate solution here if that's what's going to happen. Maybe they go talk to the parents, get back involved with everybody in the kid's life to just try and figure out what's going on, address all the concerns, you know, from all the way around, and then everybody can work together to come to the best decision. I feel like this would add more of an element of people trying to work together to just figure out what's going on as opposed to creating a big standoff right away, which is what happens when a kid finds out, oh, by the way, you're not going to get your release. All of a sudden, I think you're knocked back on your heels, defensive, digging in like, okay, this is about to be me versus the school here. I think this would help make the process much more beneficial all the way around and take away some of that edge.
Right, because even if, say that this had been implemented for the Corey Sutton situation, even if Sutton still would have wanted to leave, if there would have been that period of time where he had to wait anyway and there could have been a little bit more dialogue between him and the coaches, I guarantee you he doesn't call Bill Snyder a slave master on Twitter. I guarantee you that he would have toned down and had a chance to exhale a little bit and think about his wording before he actually, you know, maybe he still would have gone public with it, but it wouldn't have been to that extent, and things would not have escalated the way that they did.
I agree. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm crazy. 537-1350, 866-776-1350, or the Game KMAN on Twitter. If you have reaction to that, questions or comments, but to me, this made a lot of sense. And Sam Ehlinger typically is a well-thought-out guy. He's not a hot-take artist. I really respect what he has to say, and I was totally on board with that one. Again, we're going to talk to Cole Manbeck coming up next segment, Elijah Lee at 5:10, which is an awesome interview. You do not want to miss that. I'm going to introduce this topic right now so everybody can sit on it, think about it, react to it later on in the show. I actually watched part of a softball game last night, and this to me is big news. I mean, I watch college softball ever, and it took me a while. Last night I saw on Twitter as I was watching the Royals game in the latter stages of that, everybody's saying, hey, we're in like the 10th, 11th inning of this Women's College World Series game. Go check it out. Go to ESPN. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm going to watch the Royals. I'd rather do that. Well, then the Royals give up the three-run bomb. Kelvin Herrera gives up the homer, and the game all of a sudden is really out of reach. So I was like, okay, now I'm going to go watch a couple of the shows I tape on the DVR. Got through those, burned through those. And I come back, and I still see, as I pull out my phone, people are saying, man, this game's still going. This is crazy. We're in like the 16th inning. I was like, fine. I will turn it to some softball. So I did, and I will admit, I was very entertained by it was basically a half inning of it that I watched, but by the half inning that I watched with the stakes that high and such a crazy long game, I was hooked. I did actually watch it and enjoy it. And it took all that, though, to get me there. And softball is one of those sports that it would take a lot to push me to that point where I'm going to go out of my way to watch that. So I wanted to get into not only what would it take for everybody to watch softball, what would it take for you guys to watch a softball game? I know you were there with me last night watching the game. You have the same thought process as me. But I want to also later on tackle, like, what does it take for you to watch hockey? What does it take for you to watch tennis? What kind of stakes does it take to get you to actually go out of your way to flip those on? So we're going to discuss that at 5:25, an hour two of the show. But I did want to at least put that out there, that that was a thing that surprised me, that I was driven to that point last night. And I want everybody to be thinking as far as what they would do, what it would take to get you to watch all those different sports, and we'll discuss that in hour two of the show. Let's squeeze in a phone call real quick here, 537-1350, 866-776-1350. In light of the discussion we were having about trying to implement some kind of a waiting period and then taking the power out of the school's hands as far as granting a release to a player that wants to transfer, we'll talk with Larry in Manhattan. What's going on, Larry?
Yeah, I was just curious, you know, why, you know, since there's a certain amount, dollar amount of money that was invested in recruiting these kids, and then when they decide to go to another school, that school didn't invest anything. What would keep the NCAA from saying, yeah, we'll release him, but if this was across the board on every school policy, you will release him, but you have to reimburse the recruiting school so many dollars?
Well, there's two reactions I have to that. Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. There's two reactions that I have to that. One is that at most of these schools, I mean, K-State, for instance, makes like $28 million a year from the football program. They're making a lot of money off these kids. So it's a small investment for the money that's actually being made and generated by all this. Then the other thing is K-State's accepting transfers. Do we remember Arthur Brown, Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year? Miami invested a lot in him. He came to Manhattan and helped K-State win a Big 12 championship. So you get it from both sides.
Yeah, I just think it would slow down. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, maybe it would slow it down. We can't afford to lose them like Miami can. Miami can afford to lose a recruit and still be okay, or Alabama can afford to lose a recruit and still be okay. K-State can't.
Well, I somewhat agree there, Larry, and I appreciate the phone call. But the other thing I would say about that is that schools like K-State can benefit a lot from the transfer market and bringing guys in. I mean, that whole crop, when Bill Snyder came back and he got Chris Harper, Arthur Brown, those are the two that stuck around and really helped. But there was also Bryce Brown, Broderick Smith, a lot of really highly recruited kids from the state of Kansas that came from different schools, Oregon, Miami, and Minnesota. That was a big coup. That really helped out K-State. Iowa State, when Fred Hoiberg was still the basketball coach there, they made a living off of those transfer
Oh, they're
guys.
Still doing it.
I mean, DeAndre Kane, like, they basically were what they were because of the transfer market at a smaller school like K-State in terms of resources, tradition, whatever. So I think sometimes schools in K-State's position benefit from it more than they lose from it with guys leaving. So I just think there's two sides, really, to that coin. Coming up at hour two of the show at 5:10, Elijah Lee joins the show. It was an awesome interview. Really was candid about his time at K-State and what's going on now in the NFL. But when we come back, we'll talk with Cole Manbeck for the first time since this whole saga from last week. How does Cole sort out all the Corey Sutton fallout? You're listening to The Game.